Welcome to Beyond the Shelf. I'm Scott Curry with Chef's Best. We gather to talk about the trends in marketing, retail, and production in food and beverage that are shaping the industry. We're joined today by one of the top private brand experts in the nation, Amy Becker. Amy is Senior Vice President of Brand Development at Damon, where she has been for over 10 years. Prior to joining Damon, she held various marketing product management roles, including with Revlon, Coté Beauty, and IRI Market Research. Amy, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So Damon is one of those, you know, kind of wildly influential companies that, you know, perhaps many outside the industry have probably not heard of. So tell us a little bit about the wide reach of Damon and your role within the organization.
Yeah, so Damon is a global company. We work with manufacturers and retailers around the globe, helping them build their private brand program. And that's really working on anything from strategy, product development, design, all the way to execution in store and connection with the shopper. So we really do influence the, you know, the life of a private brand from beginning to end, and really help to work with our retailers and supplier partners in bringing those great products to market. And so we're actually celebrating our 50th year of business this year, and our founders really were just, you know, pioneers in the industry in developing private brands back in the 70s. So a lot of what we bring to our partners is that knowledge base of understanding the evolution of private brands, where the consumer is and where they're going. And so it really does help us play a unique role in consulting really across the globe.
And yeah, it's just one of those. Yeah, I think we all have an appreciation for where we are now. And I'll timestamp this because things are changing so often in the world. It's May 21 right now. So anyone, you know, listening in the future, where we're in the middle of the COVID, I don't know what to call it anymore, crisis. But we are at a point where a lot of restrictions are being relaxed and such across the country. So that's just kind of where we are. But, you know, I think we're all gaining a new appreciation for the companies, both the ones that we see and the ones behind the scenes that have, given us the life that we have, the access to seemingly bountiless, you know, food, beverages, you know, personal care products, et cetera. So it's wonderful to have you on here. And let our listeners know what your role is within the organization.
Sure. So I lead our strategic advisory team, which really does help our customers on the strategic side. So anything from analytics, thought leadership, consumer understanding, brand strategy. So really those more fundamental disciplines fall under my team, and really in the support of strategy overall. And so a lot of what my team works on is making sure that we stay on the pulse of what's happening in the private brand industry specifically. And so we spend a lot of time making sure we're researching the consumer, really digging into the data in much different ways than some of our competitors to have a true understanding of private brand development. Again, not even just in the US, but globally.
So I'm going to go out on a limb that you've been pretty busy and done a few Zoom calls in the last month.
Yes, it has been a very busy time for us.
Right. I'm sure a lot of folks are valuing, you know, both the research that's done and your experience that you're bringing to the table. So let's talk about what you have been talking about. It's tough to decide where to start here. I've heard a lot of assumptions about private brands and the changing habits and purchasing patterns of consumers over the last few months. I can personally speak from a household basis. That has been true for us. Everything from a stretch there where you just went into the store and got out as fast as you could and as, with as many precautions as you could take, not a lot of, you know, milling around. Obviously, there were instances where you just had to buy what was available and you couldn't necessarily be brand picky or specific with things. I would also offer, and this is again from personal experience, you know, some caution around price sensitivity as well. When things are weird, you know, you're maybe a little less likely to splurge on something that tomato sauce. You just, oh, you know what? I'm just trying to cook some pasta tonight. Maybe now's not the time to try something that's a little bit more expensive. We'll talk a little bit about the economic future and what your pulse is on that. But in the last, let's say it's 2 months, I would say is probably the safe time frame here, dating back to mid-March 2020. How have consumer habits changed? What have you seen? What has the data been telling you?
Yeah, so, you know, it's interesting. I do think this, you know, panic buying, pantry loading, out of stocks in stores have created a very different consumer over the last 2 months. And I keep getting the question, well, what's pervasive, what's going to stick, and really what was just, you know, a function of the time. And I think, you know, we're seeing consumers become much more pragmatic. We're not seeing as much pantry loading. We're starting to see the numbers normalize. But we did see tremendous trial of private brands. And I think it was driven by exactly what you said, Scott, this idea that, you know, I'm going to the shelf, I'm looking for something specific, and I'm less likely to shop multiple stores. I just want to get it and leave. So we did see tremendous trial in private brands. And what's really great is, even, you know, if we look at what we saw happening before COVID, when consumers try private brands, and the fact that the quality has become so much better over time, and a lot of places you're either at equal to the national brand or better from a quality perspective. So when shoppers are trying private brands, they tend to trust them more and are more likely to buy them across other categories. So we're actually very optimistic that this behavior and this immense trial is going to mean great things for private brands. And, you know, it's funny, I'll just give you guys a few stats, but from our research prior to COVID, it was close to 90% of shoppers trusted private brands as much as national brands. So that really just goes to show you that, you know, people were trusting private brands more. Now that they're getting trial across more categories, we really do think that this means positive growth. Because again, we're going into, you know, an economic situation that might mean growth for private brands anyway. But the reality is, we were poised for growth before. This trial is definitely going to bring in new shoppers, and you know, we'll see growth from just the economic factors. So it's a great time to be in the private brand business.
Yes, I would imagine. And as you said, I think it's perhaps fair to say that when private brands started out, so I don't know, I'm going to say 15 years ago, there was at least a perception, and I'm not qualified enough to say whether or not this is true, that private brands meant cheap and lower quality, right? I can, again, personally attest that's changed. I mean, we purchase a lot in our household, and it's worth noting as well, at Chef's Best, we have done sensory testing that backs what you're alluding to, which is that private brands often perform at parity or score above leading national brands. We've done that for a handful of different products and found that. So you mentioned that they'll change their habits. So I want to talk about what consumer habits are around private brands, because let's say I'm personally attached to a private brand. I'll call it Acme for now. And the Safeway down the street sells that, but the Kroger doesn't. If I have a strong enough affinity for that national brand, I may literally go to a different retail store so that I can acquire that. Is that the same with private brands? Do people say, gosh, you know, and I'm just using Safeway as an example, literally because down the street here, I could be speaking about Target or anything. Do people that are interested in private brands choose their retail store based on that, in the same way that I illustrated, I might choose Safeway or Kroger or Target because I want to pick up a certain private brand? Or is it that their habit is that they're going to go to the store that they're going to go to for whatever reason, convenience, maybe they find the service better, price, cleanliness of the store, who knows? And they'll just go ahead and buy the private brand when we're there. How influential is a decision in terms of choosing the retail establishment?
So I don't have a during COVID or post-COVID number, but just right before the end of the year, we had conducted some research, and consumers were telling us that about more than half of them choose their particular store for the private brand offerings that they have. So with that, it really is that there's a strengthening connection between private brand offerings and the actual store, the banner that they're shopping. And I think a lot of this, just going back to one of your earlier points, goes back to the fact that it's not just about this price option at the shelf. It really is about retailers getting behind private brands being a point of differentiation and bringing new and different and innovative items to their shoppers. And that really does create a connection. And one of the things I think is going to be really powerful about that connection is with shoppers planning to, you know, shop more frequently because they're eating at home more and some of the changing dynamics there, being inspired by a retailer and the offerings that they bring them. It's really hard when you think about, you know, the national brand assortment that you would have in any grocery store is pretty much the same, right? So right. where you're seeing that connection is really when it gets beyond just the Me Too items at the shelf, because again, you're kind of playing in that, you know, we're at a price competitive to the national brand, where, you know, you see really innovative retailers propelling ahead is by thinking very strategically about the role of innovation and the items that they're creating and creating that connection with their shoppers. So it does become a driver of store choice. And I do think we are seeing retailers accelerate innovation, because we did have a little bit of a slowdown over the last couple of months where we are focused on the stores, but now it's focusing on the consumer and what the consumer is going to expect from us as they want to be inspired to cook at home more frequently or to entertain at home more frequently if social distancing, you know, continues. So, you know, how do those factors change how we shop and how we connect with brands? I think it's really important for the private brand community to be thinking about, because the retailer has a very strong and important role in driving that connection and being that solution for a shopper, and not waiting for the national brands to play that role. Because again, the national brand is going to try and play that as a national brand across retailers.
And moving, so if we look at private brands from a marketing standpoint, again, I'm just going to loft all sorts of assumptions out here, but I think one of the reasons why private brands had, you know, on average, a more favorable price point is because they don't have to expend as much on, you know, large marketing budgets, right? You know, any given store might have 1,200 private brands. I don't see 1,200 products being advertised on a regular basis, right? In the same way that, you know, a national brand may be taking national at magazine advertisements and so on and so forth. Then COVID comes along. And if we're honest, and this is really horrible to say and use this word, but private brands got a little lucky, right? They got an opportunity that no one expected and saw coming. So people are as we discussed, trying it more. Moving forward, do you think that we'll see private brands adjusting their market to, you know, continue that market share, to talk about quality, to talk about price, to talk about, I don't know what, you know, they can choose the value proposition, but, or do you think that private brands will mostly kind of ride the wave that came upon them increase a large percentage increase in purchasing and hope, if you will, that they can maintain, you know, the advantage through price, which again, I think is a little bit related to not dumping in tons of marketing dollars on it, or will they become more aggressive in a little bit more like national brands have for decades and eternity?
You know, I do think it's an interesting time, because, you know, you're right, private brands kind of existed on shelf, played this price point, you know, where there was innovation, there might have been some, you know, advertising in store. You know, we have seen the Krogers and, you know, Albertsons and some of the larger players advertise private brands specifically. But I think, you know, as we're thinking about where the consumer is going and just the benefit of a strong quality private brand program and what that delivers to shoppers, it feels like a miss for retailers to not be taking more credit for that. And it's not in a way to, like, you know, start thinking about advertising in the same way that a national brand would, but especially as we think about the, you know, the economic climate that is happening right now, and, you know, we're not sure exactly where we're going to end up, the consumer will become more and more appreciative of price. And so being able to continue that dialogue as a connection point with those shoppers, and, you know, that we're thinking about our shoppers and not just, you know, not just trying to bring them, you know, what was, you know, in the 70s and 80s, the slower quality product. We're really trying to bring them great products, innovative, different, interesting products. We understand where they are in their life. It feels like a missed opportunity to not talk about private brands more and that benefit. But where I really think retailers could do much more, and it would not be as expensive as you might think of, you know, a huge marketing campaign, is, you know, thinking about how they're leveraging digital just to connect with shoppers in general. So we're seeing a lot of recipe creation and online cooking classes and that kind of thing. It would be great to have more of a connection to the private brand program in those types of efforts, because we do know that consumers are going to be seeking information and inspiration online. There's more people, you know, following YouTube cooking shows than ever before. So, you know, how can they play a stronger role and take credit for their brands and lead with their brands in those types of channels? I think, you know, they're doing that type of connection work anyway. So it's a really great opportunity where something may not have any brand presence at all for them to highlight their private brands and, you know, again, create that connection in a real world way with a shopper that, again, doesn't require a lot of investment, because, again, that's not really the point. We don't want to be doing things that affect the price. We really want to just be touting that benefit of the quality and really the assortment that they bring to the market. So I think there is definitely an opportunity. But again, it wouldn't be as big and flashy as, you know, some of our national brand friends out there, but definitely opportunities for things to be done to create that connection with the shopper.
Now you recently sat on a panel, a virtual panel with My Private Brand. You're among many other leaders and experts discussing the private brand industry on there. If I don't know if it's recorded available, but I would encourage anyone to listen to it. And there's some interesting stats. I want to rattle a few of those off for our listeners. And then you had five kind of, you know, pretty distinct points of recommendation for private brands moving forward. And I want to give you a chance to speak to those. But a couple of these stats here, and these were your source was according to the Advantage COVID-19 Impact on the Grocery and Food Industry, April 2020. So 59% said they'll be eating home more. Only 25% expect to eat out as frequently as they had before. Those are significant numbers. 53% are, quote, seeking better solutions. I had 70% bought a new or different brand recently, which it's tough to get 70% to agree on anything these days. 28% had a good 28% had a good experience and plan to switch permanently. Again, that's over a quarter. 49% of shoppers say they will shop online versus 42% prior to the crisis. I don't want to dwell on it, but I thought that number might actually be a little bit higher. And then probably one of the key numbers to look at is during the 2008 recession, 76% of private brand categories grew. And again, I would suggest that 2008, people probably weren't as comfortable and confident with private brand as they are now. And, you know, despite this reopening of the economy, I think we all know we've got some serious digging to do with, you know, over 30 million unemployed. So it'll be interesting to see how those numbers hold up. But you had five key, you call them kind of key points to success into this new normal. I want to give you a chance to speak on each of those. One is that you said, prioritize innovation. Shoppers will continue to be interested in new and unique products. What did you mean there?
Yeah, so a little bit of what we've been talking about here today, but, you know, shoppers are more engaged than ever. I get it. We had the panic shopping and, they were getting in and out of the store as fast as possible. But now innovation is really about, people are now shopping more. They're filling their refrigerators, they're filling their pantries, and they're thinking about things, very trend focused. Products that were in development before, they're thinking about them now more than ever. So an example that I used was, this plant-based trend was huge before COVID and a lot of product development happening in that space. And we really feel that retailers should continue to think about these trends, especially in health and wellness, because shoppers will be more tied to, them as a store and the banner that they shop most frequently for those innovative items. Since again, they're back in, back in shopping mode. But the other focus is that now that people are shopping more and eating at home more, there are categories that are primed for growth that retailers and manufacturers should be thinking about. So specifically, snacking. People are at home more, they're snacking, and we as we know that will continue. How do we bring healthy snacking into the mix and more healthy snacking type options from private brands? Inspired baking. People are baking at home more. We expect that to continue. So how do we give center store type of solutions that make that easier to really feel good about what you're creating, and it's not just a boxed cake. And then, of course, shelf-stable meals. So with this whole idea of people going back to loading the pantry, being able to go into your cabinet and have something that's a quick meal for your family will be a priority. And so those are just the types of innovation that we've been talking about. But overall, the real theme here is that, this really is about the consumer and the shopper. And as they're shopping your stores and providing them items that inspire them, that are different, that create that point of difference between you and the competition down the street, really do create that connection. And so to not lose focus of that, and where you can accelerate so that we're actually getting ahead of, either our competition or even of the national brands. So that's really what the innovation pillar is about.
Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned enhanced solutions, which food service and small specialty markets will continue to influence how food is prepared at home. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is interesting. So I don't know that anyone expected that, traditional food service would start selling groceries. And we're continuing to see that rise. As we see social distancing continue to be a factor and restaurant openings delayed or, opening in a very different way, will these food service providers continue to be grocery retailers, if you will? And so how can traditional retailers combat this? And, meal kits were always something that was talked about. Some retailers were doing it, but this, how do we inspire the everyday in the same way that a food service provider can? How do we make meal creation and inspire that meal in a different way? So are there opportunities to do different, more upscale types of meal kits that really do feel restaurant quality, but you have that comfort of creating it at home? The other thing that we've been seeing happening, and this is more of just a, how do we help local restaurants, but partnerships are arising all over the country where grocery retailers are selling, food service items in their stores. So partnering with restaurants for their recipes and then providing grab and go, take home and heat type of meals. And a lot of this is being marketed as just a, COVID helping our local restaurants, during this time. But there seems to be, a very clear consumer drive towards those types of solutions. And so can those continue after the crisis? But really, this is really about how we reinvent solutions so that there's a higher, more restaurant quality type of cooking happening at home to compete with what's happening with our retail, our food service partners becoming retailers. Mm-hmm.
This next one's obviously a little near and dear to us because it's literally what we do at Chef's Best. But we talked about this earlier, which is educating on the benefits. We talked about how, private brands, at least at the very beginning, didn't didn't really market. They just put the product out there, put a low price point, and that was that. But you suggest your sluggish economy will lead to budgeting, but shoppers don't want to feel like they're trading down. They will want a sense of normalcy. So expound on that.
Yeah, I think we talked about this a little bit as well, but this opportunity that, you know, the retailer is really bringing a great asset forward to the consumer, and we tend to not talk about it. But, you know, the quality is there. These retailers have worked really hard to build programs spanning, you know, 3,000 items and 300 categories across the store, you know, varying levels of, you know, of innovative items, or even, you know, more premium items, bringing them to market. And this is a really important time to create that connection with your shoppers. And so whether it's, messaging on your website, messaging in your store, I use the example of destinations. I think retailers could do a better job of highlighting how their products can work together, because there are very few brands that can really create solutions, never mind, again, span that 3,000 items. So, you know, creating destinations or creating a way for consumers to really interact with your brand so that it isn't just a decision at shelf. Because right now, a lot of retailers leave it to the shelf tag to be the, you know, or the packaging to be the communicator. But when you think about the breadth of the program and the power of the program, to really try to connect that. And in this time, with people trying to be more pragmatic about how they're spending, it really is a benefit without losing that normalcy and that, you know, that quality. You're not trading on anything. And so to create that connection, I think this is really the time. And again, consumers and shoppers will really appreciate it. So lots of opportunity on the educating on the benefits side.
Yeah, I could see that. You know, I think as people look, inevitably tighten the wallet, and I'm not saying everyone in the country, but let's just be realistic. I mean, there's concern out there, whether you have lost your job or, you know, virtually everyone I personally know is at least taking a little bit of a hit somewhere along the way. I think that opportunity for private brands to make sure that the shopper has that feeling that they didn't have to just buy lesser quality or lower price, right? If your wallet's a little tighter and you're there to making the decision, I think there's a benefit for the private brand if that consumer is selecting it in with the feeling that they are buying of high quality versus the consumer leaving the store and saying, well, I saved a bunch of money, thank goodness, because I'm a little bit more nervous about money right now. They shouldn't have to make that trade, I think. Go ahead if you wanted to add to that.
No, I was just going to say, you know, it's interesting because we've also seen, and I've been in private brands for the last 10 years, but the change in how retailers are thinking about even things like package design, right? So This isn't about making a consumer feel like they're making a lesser choice. Design doesn't even have to mimic the national brand anymore. You can really have an inspiring design and have something that a consumer is proud to take out of their cabinet or leave on their table. And that's okay. You don't have to signal that you're, you know, a private brand. You really can stand alone. You can have, you know, great inspiring packaging and really, you know, be different. And I think that's part of this as well. Like, it doesn't just have to be you're picking at shelf because you see there's a 30% price difference. Yeah, that we appreciate that, but we want to feel good about the products that we're buying and we're putting in our cabinet. That's really coming through in just how wildly different design has been over the past 10 years. It's no longer like this me too looking item in a lot of places, which is great because I know I personally feel better. You know, it makes me feel better when I'm picking up an item that doesn't feel less expensive, because really what's in the package is equal or better. So it's. I think that's a great transition that we've made to really being brands versus, you know, private label or generic. I hate to say that word, but
yeah. Well, I think it's fair to say, but you know, this was just early in the evolution that term generic was kind of earned. I mean, it from a packaging standpoint, as you said, it was either mimic a competitor or national brand, or just like literally be the most plain package you could possibly make. I can remember that. I would say that that's generally not the same way now, but I can remember 10, 15 years ago, it was almost a race to see who could have the most plain. It was like the signal was this is so plain that you know it's private brand because it couldn't possibly be anything else, right?
Exactly, exactly.
It's just like font in white and maybe a color if they were lucky.
Great.
Your fourth point was delivering inspiration. So consumers are likely to continue a more at-home based lifestyle and would be looking for new ways to feed and entertain themselves. So you touched on this a little bit, recipes and so on. Is that what you meant?
Yeah, or, you know, I think there's a great example with Kroger. They just launched Social, and it's a really cool social media-based application that's all private brand-based. So the event that I highlighted, it was right before Mother's Day, and they created a whole, you know, recipe collection, as well as, you know, they had a couple of other assets that they would give you all around celebrating mom, but all of the recipes were you know, only inclusive of private brands. And it was just a really great way to bring a community together, and people would post their pictures. So the week prior was an ice cream social. They had, you know, families posting pictures of, you know, having private selection ice cream, as well as, you know, showing, you know, how their family's enjoying it. And what's just really great about that was it's an everyday occurrence, having an ice cream, you know, having an ice cream cone or what have you, but feeling this connection to other people who are doing the same thing at the same time and tying it to private brands, I just think is an excellent execution. But again, it's being in places that consumers aren't expecting you and owning spaces. And oftentimes private brands don't want to do that. You know, we don't want to highlight ourselves in recipes, or we don't want to have something that's specific to private brands. But I think, you know, consumers are appreciative of it, and it does create that connection. So it's just another way to market, but also inspire those like little moments that are really special. So I think, you know, we've seen some really great progress specifically around, you know, just this COVID time and people being at home pop up that I think, I hope, will continue to be available and more widespread after the crisis.
Mm-hmm. And you've been real generous with your time. I want to make sure we get to the fifth point, which is e-commerce. So are you suggesting, Amy, that e-commerce is here to stay? Is this a thing?
Absolutely. And I think, yeah.
Let me just add to that. Yeah. When I think private brand, I don't currently think e-commerce. So pick it up from there. Tell me I'm right or wrong.
Yeah, well, I was going to say you challenged my number, and I would say I challenged that too. You know, about 50% of people are shopping on e-commerce. I do think it's growing, but I think you're exactly right. You know, find a retailer who leads in e-commerce with their private brands, and you know, there aren't many. And actually, the retailer that I focused on was Thrive Market, which is not even a you know, brick and mortar store. And they do such a great job of having dedicated pages to talk about the benefits of their private brands. They link their private brands to solutions and consumer needs, and they lead in search. And so, you know, those are, I think, some really great benefits to make sure that you're kind of standing behind your private brand, and it's what consumers see when they come to your site. But also going back to the economics of this, you know, when a consumer has or they're shopping online, they have the ability to see what their basket is ringing up to, right? And that's not the benefit we typically have when we shop a brick and mortar store. And it seems like such a miss that we are not seeing more opportunities to show consumers that they can save and how they could stretch their dollars. It feels like a miss to me because, you know, digital shopping is definitely here to stay. We're going to be doing more of it. But if it becomes more of a way of a retailer's helping me to stretch my dollars, feels like a great place for us to be playing and to be helping, you know, really the consumer understand that benefit of the difference between buying, you know, buying the private brand or not, or even just suggesting them when there might be an out of stock on something. Again, there's tons of opportunity, but completely agree. It has been sort of the non-focused point for private brand. We focused a lot on how we get, you know, great coverage in the store, but now more than ever, we need to make sure we're not only present on e-commerce, but we're leading in e-commerce. We're standing behind our brands and really, really highlighting the benefits to the shopper.
And that's a great point you made. I'd never thought of that food, you know, food and beverage shopping, grocer shopping, is different in that if I, when I go to the store, if I go to the store, I don't know, Dick's Sporting Goods, and I'm going to go pick up a few things. How many things am I going to buy? Maybe 2, 3, 4 at most, 5 at Christmas time. I've got a pretty good running total in my head of what I'm buying. When I'm online, you know, other than maybe, let's all face it, clothing can get out of hand every now and then. You build your shopping cart and you're like, oh boy, $400. I gotta, you know, maybe I don't need 4 shirts. But grocery is different in that you're really not, in general, having a running total. And I think that we've all had the experience where we go to checkout and, you know, you're oftentimes surprised one way or the other, right? It's comes to $87 and you're like, oh, I'm pretty good this week, you know? Or on the other hand, it comes to $230 and then you remind yourself you bought 6 bottles of wine and that's how you got there. But that is an interesting behavioral change that I'd love to, I assume there'll be data coming out in the future, is how the shopping cart total has fluctuated or changed, because it would be like going through the grocer and every time you grab something off your shelf, watching the cart, right, go from $87 to $89 to $93. And that'll be interesting. And I could certainly see how private label will help people, because you can't turn back when you're at the grocery store, right? Once, I guess you could, but you don't. Once the individual has rung up your items, the number comes out, it says $172, you're paying, right? Majority of people are not going to say, oh, I got to back off here. But on a shopping cart online, you can do that. And I said, we've all done that. You know, you decide you don't need 3 shirts, you can get by in life with 2 shirts. It'd be really interesting to see how people swap the cart, because they get that running total, you know, basically following them through the grocery aisles, if you will. Had never thought of that.
Yeah, well, we're definitely doing what we can to track behavior online. So hopefully at some point in the future, we'll have some more tangible data on that. But I do think it's a definite shift for all the reasons you outlined.
Yeah. Well, when you publish it, let us know. Amy, you've been wonderful to have on. Clearly, I can see why you have this title of strategic advisor. You have an incredible pulse on the industry, and I'm sure that you know, a lot of companies out there value your insight and are probably emailing you right now for more. So we'll let you get back to what's probably been said very busy and very hectic for you, but seems that you're also enjoying it as well a little bit.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. This is great.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure. Take care. Thank you for listening to Beyond the Shelf, presented by Chef's Best. For more podcast episodes from inside the ever-changing food and beverage industry, visit chefsbest.com.